Hello, and welcome to the Cancer Horizons podcast. In each episode, you'll hear from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best: provide cancer updates, research, and education. The work continues and evolves for the team at Latinas Contra Cancer as the service and advocacy organization working with Latino patients with cancer approaches its 20th anniversary later this year. Founded in 2003, the organization has provided education and support to thousands of patients. In this episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast, Executive Director Darcy Green tells CURE about the evolving mission of the organization and the story of its Defensoras Health Advocacy Cohort, 10-week training program launched in 2021.
The needs have changed. It's important for organizations to do this continuous check-in to see, is our mission still needed? Have parts of it been accomplished? Have the needs of the people we're serving changed? And when the organization was founded 20 years ago, and even though I wasn't there as executive director, I do know about this a little bit firsthand because my grandmother passed away of breast cancer. And while she was battling breast cancer and looking for a support community, she was in the very first support group ever held by LCC. Wow. And so I know firsthand how important that work was at the time and how really revolutionary it was. Even defiant in a way, right? That patients deserved access to care in their language and in ways that weren't just based out of hospital settings and of clinic settings, which can be traumatic for some people, you know, in itself. And so at the time, there really weren't a lot of options for culturally and linguistically competent care. I mean, we were just kind of having these discussions in healthcare around the importance of patients being able to access care in their own language, and that language alone didn't equal culturally competent, right? That language, simply having someone who could technically, literally speak your language, really wasn't enough to ensure that people were getting the quality of care that they needed, which we know is very much based in trust and relationship. And so at the time, that was a really important issue. Now, fast forward, and so we were founded doing that with health education and research and trying just to build better relationship between patient and the healthcare provider. But a lot of it was really on also individual behavior, right? And making sure that patients, for their individual behavior and lifestyle, we were helping people to lower their cancer risk or to detect cancer much earlier. Now, fast forward, we're still doing that work, right? We're still trying to make sure that everyone has access to linguistically and culturally competent care. But if you look around the healthcare system, most places are doing that kind of work. They may not be doing it well, right? They may not be doing it well. It may not always be adequate. And we still fight to plug those gaps. But the language around culturally and linguistically competent care is very normalized. At least here in the area where we're at. We know there are other places in the country that are lagging far behind, but for here where we are, it's normalized. And many organizations have patient navigators. Many organizations have promotoras. And that was all just new work, right? New work that we were doing at the time, 20 years ago, with our promotora model and patient navigation model. The way that work has changed now, and it's changed pretty radically in the last 5 years that I've been there, and that's probably to be expected whenever you have a change of leadership. People come in with their life experience and their knowledge, and iterate and build on, right, what's there. And we have evolved to focus much more on systems, and still holding up the importance of individual behavior, but recognizing that you really can't individual behavior way out of health injustice and systemic health disparities, that these are less about the problems with patients and more about a healthcare system that is just not adequately meeting the needs of all of its patients. And so when we, as we have started to look more at systems and how we could have patients doing everything right? Like my grandmother, right? Everything is healthy lifestyle, maintaining a healthy diet, didn't smoke, didn't drink, didn't do any of those things, and still got breast cancer. And actually many of the people she knew did as being orchard workers and cannery workers, recognizing that there are some injustices that we just can't overcome, or have no control over, that impact your risk for cancer, or the likelihood that you're going to detect cancer at a much later stage, or the likelihood that you're not going to get the things that you need into survivorship to make sure that you have a long, healthy, thriving life after cancer. And so we have pivoted, and we're still doing service providing, we're still doing health education and patient navigation and patient advocacy, and all of those programs have evolved as you would expect. And we've added this other space of programming that is our first venture into what's not service providing outside of research. And so we are full speed ahead into this area of patient organizing. And we have recognized that ethically as an organization, and certainly this has been fueled, and our passion for it has grown because of the pandemic. I think the pandemic changed a lot of things for a lot of people. Unfortunately, it didn't change enough about healthcare, right? Like going, I don't know how one comes out of experiencing and witnessing the disparities during the pandemic, and we don't come out of that with some plan for a universal healthcare system that provides adequate and excellent care to every single person through the lens of equity and with urgency. And so because we haven't gone through that, right? We didn't, as a country, have that reckoning for ourselves or that awakening. I mean, it's crazy how much we like quickly built up a safety net and then like dismantled it as quickly as we possibly could. And for someone working in the cancer space, seeing how cancer is also not anyone's fault, it is also a societal problem. It is also something that we should be giving people universal free access to treatment and other services for, and we just don't. As an organization, we have been very much changed by the pandemic because our population is the medically vulnerable, immunocompromised folks, right? And Latino and low income. And in this area, we know that the Latino community was hit the hardest economically as well. And so ethically, our response to that has been, it's not enough just to help people navigate health disparity. It's not enough just to help people navigate what we know to be a completely predictable, preventable injustice. We have to eliminate it. And not we, right? Not we as LCC, not we, the individual employees at LCC. We have to start holding space for patients to become powerful and to eliminate those disparities for themselves. Because all of these things that we're working toward still are not changing systems to make sure that people have the access to the care that they need. And that these other social determinants and other factors that prevent people from prioritizing their care, that people aren't battling those alone. And we hear that a lot in the cancer space, like no one should battle cancer alone. But the reality is that the way the healthcare system is set up, you really are made to believe that your individual issue is your individual issue. And when you convene patients together and just hold space for them to talk about their individual journeys, cancer or otherwise, this really works with most chronic conditions or any healthcare experience, you start to see that there are a lot of similarities, and it helps people to bridge their individual struggle to achieve health justice to a collective struggle to achieve health justice. And so we still, I think, embody the spirit of our mission around serving the Latino community issues of cancer. But the lens that we approach that with, and seeing these cancer disparities very firmly in this space of racial, social, and gender injustice, it changes the way we go about attacking the problem, and it changes the way we are in relationship with the people that we serve.
So what does that then kind of on an actionable, functional level, what does that then look like? Kind of balancing the traditional functions of LCC in like helping patients navigate the system while also working for broader, more systemic change, and enabling patients to work for systemic change themselves. What does that look like, act like, sound like in the day-to-day of the LCC operations?
Yeah. I have to say, from like the first week that I started at LCC, I knew I wanted to hire community organizers. And that was because, and this is before the pandemic, right? But really the window opened up to do this because of the pandemic, because I've spent, much of my career working in healthcare, right? I worked at Kaiser and then I worked in the legislature before that. And so, and I way back when was a community organizer. And so I believe very strongly in community organizing being the way to take on really big, overwhelming social problems. And what this looks like is like we just hired two community organizers, right? Two full-time organizers. And what they exist to do is that. Like we have two people who are dedicated to having one-on-ones with our clients, with patients, and are starting to build organizing committees so that we can identify health justice campaigns, launch health justice campaigns, and win those things through building power. And so, what that looks like, what that could look like in the future for us, in the very near future for us, once we identify these health justice campaigns, is to identify who has the power to give us what it is that we want, right, in those campaigns. And then strategizing on how we're going to achieve that. So that could look, if it's the county level, that could look like some activism and advocacy there. It could look like demonstrations of different kinds. It could look like disruption of different kinds. If it's a state issue or a city issue or a federal issue or a hospital level issue, using tried and true tactics of community organizing to build power and get people with power to do things they otherwise wouldn't do. If without fear of a consequence. And so we're employing just the like I said, tried and true community organizing principles that have existed in our community, particularly in the Latino community and communities of color and Black community for a very long time. And so we're in that process now of building our patient base, identifying them out of hospital sites and insurance sites so that we know if there's something happening at this specific hospital or this specific payer, insurance carrier that we can start to build the number of people that we've organized that get their care there or get are insured by this insurer. So in the day-to-day, we still provide program, right? We still provide services. That's still happening, right? And those programs are evolving and expanding. We're expanding into South County, expanding further out into Salinas and Watsonville and those areas where we know our communities as well. And so the program and the service providing aspect of it still is existing and it's growing. And then we've added this community organizing. Another thing that we added a couple of years ago in preparation for this work to start organizing, knowing that we would need to somehow start to identify a base. And it's pretty difficult to go onto hospital campuses and just start identifying patients. And so in order to start to build that pipeline that our organizers could start from, we launched a program called Defensoras. And Defensoras is a 10-week health advocacy cohort. We're now recruiting for cohorts 4 and 5. We will also have cohorts 6 and 7 by the end of this year be completed because we want to get to 100 Defensora graduates pretty quickly, so we start to have a base of our organizers to start from, knowing that there'll be lots of other pipelines of bases as well as we connect with employee unions and we connect with other patient groups. But we wanted to start to build our own. So Defensoras is really close to my heart. I still facilitate the English cohort. We have a facilitator for the Spanish cohort. And when I started out with it, we had just one cohort as a pilot, about 12 people in it who graduated, who came every single Saturday morning to for 2 hours, in addition to homework and reading. And we did a full 10-week of modules, and ranging from the very first, day one is a deep dive into the history of healthcare in the US. That's really important to understand the history of how healthcare started in the US and all the different ways that it's gone about in order to understand why it's so difficult to fix today. And so we start from the founding of our country and slavery and how different bodies were viewed in healthcare and the forming of the American Medical Association and all the different, I mean, it's actually the one like super data history rich one. It's definitely the most like a lecture of all of the modules, but We do a just a 2 hour understanding of the like the actual starting of the beginnings, the makings of healthcare, all the way through. We stop at Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act. And then, like, for example, the second session is all on payer systems, like what are they? What's the difference between HMOs and PPOs? And then we go into healthcare delivery. What is that? What goes into healthcare delivery? How to read your bills, how to read insurance bills, what happens when you go to the ER. Then we go into patient advocacy. What is effective patient advocacy? How do you advocate for yourself? And we do a deep dive into the data around Latina health. Right now, it's a Latina focused. It's actually our one non-cancer specific program. And so, actually, we have a health education. I guess is not specifically for cancer patients, but this actually doesn't talk about cancer at all, really, because it's just meant to be a general education about healthcare. And so we go all the way through that, and we do the deep dive into the data, and then we go into social determinants and what are they, and then we go into different campaigns around health or otherwise that have happened and been originated by the Latino community over time. So we look into the farm workers, and some we have here happening in East San Jose, some in other countries, to just establish for the people that we're serving that as Latinas, we have this ancestral pull and draw to being the defenders of the health of our communities for as far back, right, as we go. And then we end it right at the point of, so what do you do about it? Right. And so we've taken people through this 10-week journey to understand healthcare in the US, to understand the language of healthcare in the US, because it's its own language, as I know from working 8 years at Kaiser. And all the way, and then we go through this data and we get, and people start to get really angry, right? Because they see their own stories reflected in these disparities and in the data. Actually, we do one module that's my favorite. It's one of the most powerful, and it's where we look at the Patient Bill of Rights. And there's one universal Patient Bill of Rights written by the Hospital Association. It's definitely reads like it's written by the Hospital Association. And you know, that Patient Bill of Rights exists in every hospital setting. Different hospitals may tweak it a little bit, but it's overall, they're the same basic 12 rights, 12 or so rights. And we take a look at that. We do a deep dive. We do an exercise where we ask them to think about their own healthcare experience. They're all there because they've experienced some injustice or they've witnessed an injustice for someone, their loved one, in health. In the delivery system specifically. And we asked them, have you seen this patient bill of rights? Most have said no. Knowing what these bill of rights are, would that have made a difference? And some people will say, yeah, I didn't know how to write to second opinion. Yeah, I didn't know I had a right to this or that. And some people are like, no, what I experienced isn't covered here at all, which makes a lot of sense too. And then we asked them to draft them themselves. Like, what's a Defensora's patient bill of rights? It's my favorite exercise and it always makes me tear up when I read them because the beautiful patient bill of rights that patients come up with, particularly patients who live in that gap of health disparity and health injustice, and the words that don't exist in the current patient bill of rights, that the words that are the patients that we serve develop for themselves. And I think, oh my God, if we could pass any one of these patient bill of rights, it would be such a better place. And so that's an example of a potential campaign, right, moving forward. And so we take them through all of that and they get really amped up about like, well, what do we do about it? And then that's the point of organizing, right? Like you're not graduating out of Defensoras, you're actually graduating into this powerful network of patients who are like, yeah, what do we do about it? We can do something about it. We can do something about it together. And in fact, that's the only way that we can do something about it.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cancer Horizons podcast or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cancer Horizons podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. Find us on Facebook at Cure Today, Twitter at Cure_Today, and Instagram at Cure Today.